to get what I want, so are you starting to see, to see? I think you do, I think you do. It's time for you to step up if you wanna be with me, with me. I think you do, I think you do.
But don't go slow, that is not the way we play. Slowly ain't my kind of game. Ready, set, go!
Pick up the pace and step on it. Rip up the pace if you want it. What, you know you gotta what. I got the goods and I want you. I got the goods, I'm waiting to get you. What, you know you gotta what.
And it's up to you how far we take this. Yes, it's up to you, so take the lead. And it's up to you, so tell me what I gotta sign. Waiting at the finish line, baby, ready, set.
The Saturdays and work. I wonder if they check their payslips. Who knows? Astoundingly, if we look at some recent findings, we find that many folk don't check their payslips. And in addition to that, we also find a recent research has revealed that the United Kingdom is the unpaid overtime capital of Europe. Okay, this is not good. We need to start addressing this. So let's talk to two fabulous individuals to actually address this. First of all, the Managing Director of ADP UK, the wonderful Jeff Phipps. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
And the equally wonderful ADP Human Resources Director, that's Annabelle Jones. Good morning, Annabelle.
Good morning.
And now, Annabelle, there are presumably sceptics out there who say, great, if many of our employees don't actually check their salary or payslips, we can just pay them nothing. They won't know, effectively, or maybe they would. But this does seem a very strange thing to happen.
Yeah, I would agree. I think up until now, people who are working sort of non-typical employees, so whether you're working shift work or you're doing temporary seasonal work, if you're not considered an employee, then you haven't up until now been entitled to receive a payslip. So you wouldn't actually have any way of checking how your pay is being calculated unless you're really good at keeping records yourself. Mm. So it is the legislation that's now coming in tomorrow means that people will now get a payslip, and that payslip will have a breakdown of how that pay has been calculated.
Which certainly helps, and as you rightly say, tomorrow, April the 6th, of course, payslips will be easy to understand for employees and provide more clarity on hours that workers are paid for. Now, in the studio, we have a young undergraduate broadcast journalist who does a fair amount of paid and unpaid work. Emily, you were equally surprised to sort of find that people were sort of confused by payslips as well.
Yes, definitely. I just don't understand what people would find confusing about payslips.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, without necessarily going into a whole range of educational sort of systems, etc., this will be a way to address that notion of a report finding that more than a quarter of UK workers wouldn't actually know if they've been paid incorrectly. I mean, Jeff, were you surprised by this, or was it just a case of, well, you know, we're Britain, we do as much unpaid overtime work as we can because that's what we like doing?
I think that payslips can be quite... There's a lot of information on them, and it can be quite difficult to understand what all of that is, and there's lots of different information, and there is also there's also how that is calculated, and the clarity of how that calculation takes place isn't always clear. An example I'd give you that I'm aware of is that one of our customers is a leisure centre, and some of the people working in that leisure centre, they might be working on reception for some of the day, they might be working as a personal trainer another part of the day, and they might be working as a lifeguard at other hours, and they get different rates of pay for all of those. So when you think about how that all goes onto a payslip and everything that you'd actually have to keep track of to make sure that that was all done correctly, there's quite a lot of information there, and things can be changing quite regularly on people's payslips.
In terms of the number crunching, the number of hours that workers say they do on an unpaid basis per week, 5.25 hours in the east of England. London, not surprisingly, I think leads the field with a little over 8.5 hours per week. The southeast, 6.75 hours and so on. Northeast, just over 5 hours. It's always difficult when you're looking to monetize these kind of things, but Annabelle, is there a way in which obviously what's happening tomorrow will actually begin to start ensuring that perhaps negotiations and things can be worked through, or can we look forward to a 21st century world in which we still have that tendency to exploit workers on both sides of the fence?
I'm not sure it's all about exploitation. I think sometimes companies don't necessarily even realise that their employees are working more hours, particularly with flexibility now of people being able to work wherever they want. People are logging on in the evenings and weekends to do that work. That is still working, it's still overtime, but they're not logging it, it's not being tracked. So even with the change in the legislation, with the new payslips, that information is still not going to get recorded. I think what companies need to do is step back and think about whether that's good for the business and good for their employees, and actually are there better ways to address this problem by giving people better tools and helping them to manage their time and work more effectively.
Wearing your hat as a graduate in psychology from the University of Portsmouth, were you surprised by this, or would you just say, well, that's human behaviour for you, what the hey?
I think it doesn't surprise me. I think it is human behaviour, but I think that we're so much more aware of it now, and I think it is going to change. I think culturally we are in a position now where people are much more aware of it and are going to want to start to address that balance.
Have you got any questions you'd like to put to these fine folk yourself, Emily? She's stunned by the whole thing, basically, in terms of that whole thing.
I always have the preconceived idea.
I'm looking at that whole notion of the Employment Rights Act of 1996. I mean, that's obviously the last century, etc. Is it a case, Jeff, that from your own perspective, that's now no longer fit for purpose, or is it a case of, well, we're doing what we do in Britain, which is tweaking the Act to make sure it becomes more clearer?
That's a good question. I'm not familiar with every word of the Act. Mm. I think that, clearly, as Annabelle touched on, there's so much change going on in the workplace now. People that just look at how we're using our phones, and flexible working can be a really, really good thing. And so there's two sides of the coin. There's the, well, you know, this gives me the flexibility so that I can live my life, do things like, you know, can still work, but do things like look after, pick my kids up from school. Those things are great, fantastic. But there's also the danger that that could be taken too far, either by the employer's expectation, or in some cases the employees themselves. Some people really seem to enjoy their work and they want to give everything. And you've got to ask yourself, well, who's looking out for those people there? And that brings into effect things. There's a lot of healthy discussion about mental welfare of workers and the risk of burnout. So I think it's quite difficult for just to rely purely on legislation. Employers have got to think about, well, what's our job here? How do we really make sure that our employees turn up and can do the best work they can without it just consuming their whole lives? But also I think there has to be a responsibility as us and workers to make sure that we're looking after ourselves and we're getting the right balance of these things.
You've raised a number of key things there, including obviously quality of work experience. Presumably, Annabelle, you would say yes, it's good to have things such as upskilling built into your working strategy, because otherwise, if you're not prepared to adapt and change, then maybe, like the dinosaur, you become extinct.
Yeah, I think it's important that people are always looking at that, and companies are providing opportunities for people to continue to upskill, whether that just be through the jobs. The world is changing. The world of work is changing so rapidly at the moment. People have got to find ways to keep ahead and keep looking at keeping their skills fresh.
So what about the whole notion of portfolios of work? Because that's the other sort of aspect. Emily, you're a student at the University of, the Trinity, All Saints in Leeds. You're doing broadcast journalism and so on. I'm sure you two sort of talked about the need to have flexibility, portfolios, etc. I mean, Jeff, do you think the future of the work is that no longer can we actually say, yes, you can have a career doing the same thing, that actually that is the way of the 21st century? You will have a working portfolio of things that you put together.
You know, I see a lot of discussion. I hear a lot of discussion about this. I guess there's a little bit of hopefully healthy cynicism from me. I've seen predictions before. There was, if you go back a year or two, there was a lot of discussion about things like gig economy. Mm. And the research that we've done has shown that some of that is now sort of waning. And so I'm not as convinced of this. Of course, what we don't know yet is the march of technology and how that's going to shape careers for the future. I don't think that, for example, the discussions about automation and robots are going to mean that there are going to be the sort of sometimes doomsday reports about how many jobs are going to be taken over by these things. The work that we've done ourselves and the research we've looked at says that actually some of the more mundane parts of jobs can be taken out for these things, and that can actually free up people to do things that are more sort of stimulating for them, if you like. So I think that the technology can work really well. I'm an optimist as far as that goes. Whether that means that you need portfolio careers or not, for me, the jury is out on that.
Good to hear that you're optimist, Jeff. Annabelle, are you optimistic, pessimistic? Is it a case of, just don't ask me that. It's too stressful.
No, I'm an optimist. I think I'm really excited about the future and the way it's going. And I think the fact that, a lot of talk about millennials, but I think not to even stereotype them, I think just generally people like the stimulation of being able to do different types of work and have that much more flexible career. It's not so linear now. I think, it's not about climbing the ladder necessarily. It's more about crossing the mountain.
And other useful metaphors. It's been fantastic sort of touching base. I mean, we could go on and on because the whole notion of where we go with this. But the headlines, effectively, the Employment Rights Act 1996 has been amended. It will be amended tomorrow, 6th of April. The aim is to give employees clarity with their pay slips to ensure that is sorted through from that. Emily, I suppose in terms of your own particular work, whether you're building and installing wooden and steel gates and fences, whether you're working in waitressing, housekeeping in the Duke of Edinburgh and various other things, you're still getting paid. That's the important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where can people go to find out further details, Jeff and Annabelle, about either ADP UK or some of the topics we've been talking about today in terms of how many workers are actually doing and how many hours per week, etc.?
So our website, the ADP website, has full details of our report, so the ADP's Workforce View in Europe 2019 report. So I'd encourage your listeners to go to our ADP website and have a read.
And although we're going to get through the entire interview without mentioning the B word, is that a case of that's the great unknown? We know as much, presumably, as Theresa May when it comes to what's likely to happen in terms of legislation in months and years to come.
Yes, I think that it's a difficult time for business at the moment, clearly.
That's an understatement, Jeff, I think.
I'm trying to be polite.
Yeah,
about this,
indeed.
But it's challenging to know. We need to know what's coming. And obviously, there is, the future. If Brexit happens, and then there's going to be legislation changes, and businesses need time to adjust.
Yep.
You think about the computer systems, think about how they their workers and looking after those people. Think about the supply chains. There's a lot of work to be done, and we need some clarity and we need some time to adjust.
And presumably, Annabelle, you'd endorse that together with the ancient Chinese curse that we live in interesting times.
Yes, absolutely.
Annabelle Jones, HR Director for ADP UK, and Jeff Phipps, Managing Director of ADP UK. Many thanks indeed. I'm sure we'll speak again very soon. Take care now.
Thank you.
and playing every day.
In terms of ambitions that needs to be realised by voice broadcasters, clearly asking happiness expert Miriam Akhtar whether the theme to Happy with Pharrell Williams is indeed her theme song is one of those questions which I think we can now actually answer. Miriam, is that your personal theme?
It is a definite thumbs up from me.
Marvellous. This is what we like to hear. Excellent stuff there. Now, we're here to talk today about, obviously, happiness and well-being to offset a whole range of things. You are one of 100 global experts who have been invited to contribute to the World Book of Happiness. And Lord knows we need that. Let's face it. I mean, you know, this is a book that's been given to 200 world leaders with a request to put well-being on their national agenda. In terms of the actual research that suggests that basically what do we in Britain want of our holidays to keep us happy? What do we want? Are holidays changing? Is it a case of there's so much stress on trying to be happy on a holiday that we just don't enjoy ourselves anymore?
Well, yes, this new survey from Camping in the Forest shows that camping holidays are becoming a firm favourite, with almost half of us saying that we are considering going on a camping holiday this year. So I think we are really rediscovering the joys of camping and being in the UK and being close
to nature. And also 24% of us, so around a quarter of us, have decided that we're going to stay home for our main holiday this year.
I wonder if that has anything to do with the changing political situation and our potential relationships with Europe, but that's, we won't go into that. But just
I think so.
Another line there, indeed. So, in terms of the findings themselves, were you surprised by notions of being surrounded by nature? Because, I mean, there is a sense initially when you saw camping in the forest, does that mean it's rather like a Richard O'Brien Rocky Horror show where you say, no, it's a different kind of camping, obviously. But is that something which, you know, somehow it taps into something which deeply is in our psyche, that actually the connection between humanity and nature, ultimately we still need to acknowledge that we are stewards of the planet?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of research which shows the benefits of being close to nature. You know, all the fresh air and the aromas of being in the forest, it calms us down. It reduces levels of psychological stress, and it increases our sense of positivity, of well-being. So if you're looking for an instant detox, an instant digital detox, just get out into the woods. And the Japanese have invented a therapy called Shinrin Yoku, and this is forest bathing. And this is total immersion in a wood. And what they found is that this has quite a lot of benefits for our well-being. It helps restore us if we're feeling mentally fatigued. It helps our brains to work better, and more than anything, it calms us down. It slows us down. It brings down the blood pressure, and it restores our well-being.
In the studio, we have Emily Hartley, who's an undergraduate at the Leeds Trinity University. Emily, do you find yourself getting stressed? I mean, does what Miriam's been saying resonate with yourself, that actually we should be more connected with nature?
I definitely do like to get outside to wind down sometimes. It does help with, well, uni can be quite stressful, I guess.
a slight understatement there from that point of view in terms of what's being demanded and so on. And is this something, Miriam, that can work literally no matter what your age or generation? It doesn't matter whether it's from 8 to, I don't know, 98, basically.
Oh, absolutely. So what being in nature, being out in the woods does, it activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is a state of relaxation. So it calms the body down. It restores us to a state of well-being. So yes, so it helps to manage that stress response and lower anxiety and depression.
So would a possible solution to some of the political problems be to get Vladimir Putin together with Theresa May and Donald Trump, put them in the forest and say, just be happy? Okay.
Wow, it might help. Who knows?
Maybe Donald Tusk could actually be there as well. Just a different line on that perspective.
Well, I tell you, another thing that we've discovered is that being close to nature is associated with increased serotonin production, which is one of the happy hormones. What being in a forested environment does is that it helps to generate alpha brainwaves. And these are the brainwaves that are associated with calm, with a meditative state. So maybe this is what our leaders could do with.
This is the words of Miriam Akhtar, needs to be listened to. We put it out in that sort of way. Emily, any questions you want to put to Miriam about the event, about camping in the forest? I mean, I'm just a bit confused about, you know, if you're doing forest or cooking over fires, etc., clearly there are health and safety issues here, Miriam. I don't want to add to the stress of things, but, you know, if you're using two pieces of wood and rubbing them briskly together, that could cause more frustration than happiness.
Well, one of the joys of camping is the freedom that it gives us, the freedom to do our own thing when we want to, and it's one of the three fundamental needs of well-being. Autonomy is one of the three fundamental needs, alongside a sense of competence and relatedness. So DIYing your holiday satisfies all of these needs.
I was intrigued by the line, fly and flop sun lounger holidays, which may be falling out of favour. Is that because actually ultimately they're just vacuous and empty and there's more to life than that?
Yeah, that is certainly true. We have a yearning for novelty. Some of us have more of a yearning for it than others, but basically all of us enjoy the reward of having something new and different. It satisfies our curiosity about things, and it also gives us a dose of dopamine, which is one of the other happy hormones. So there are reasons for this. So novelty, something that breaks the script of our normal routine, is associated with higher, you know, better mood states.
I'll just put it to our young correspondent in the studio, Emily. What's been your favourite holiday, and what was the rationale?
Have you
ever had a holiday?
I mean, yeah, I've been on lots of holidays. Yeah, I just like seeing different cultures and different places. So I think my favourite holiday was possibly Hong Kong. Also, I'm a big foodie, so definitely the food in Hong Kong.
That's the interesting thing, actually, because this survey from Camping in the Forest shows that one of the reasons why we love to travel in the UK and go camping is because of a chance of sampling local cuisine. I think the food culture in the UK over the last 20 years or so has really improved.
Personally, I cannot wait for July this year when Little Book of Happiness is going to be produced for the world. 12 Habits of Happiness, one of which, of course, is what we've been talking about today, turning to nature. I know you might possibly turn around and say, Miriam, Lord, is this where we're at in the 21st century? We actually have to have guides to happiness, but maybe we forget human beings do need to sometimes take time out to just reset the batteries and so on. Otherwise, we're heading for all sorts of challenges.
Absolutely. You know, one of the habits of happiness in my book, The Little Book of Happiness, is to turn to nature. And, for example, green exercise, which is physical activity in a natural environment, starts producing positive emotion in a matter of minutes. So, you know, there are natural things that we can do which act as natural antidepressants that help to boost our mood. And I think within psychology, we dwelt a lot on what's wrong with people, but I think what's really interesting, my field, which is positive psychology, is that now we have so much knowledge about what helps us feel well and function well, what it takes to live a good life, and that's what I'm really pleased about. We have the evidence now as to what works.
As we say, we know we've been born, we know we're going to be sort of checking out in one way, shape or form in the maybe not too distant future or whatever, but it's the bits that we do in between. Those are the things that really are memorable and work worthwhile sort of accessing. Campinginthforest.co.uk, clearly the go-to website for camping in the forest. But in terms of finding out more about, obviously, your own work, Miriam, in terms of Little Book of Happiness, etc., presumably just using those search engines to type in Miriam Akhtar and you'll get magical things manifesting.
Well, yeah, if you can spell my surname, which is A-K-H-T-A-R, but if you're on social media, you can go to at Poz Psychologist, or my website's positivepsychologytraining.co.uk.
And so I know that there's a classic Buddhist phrase that says, where there is choice, there is misery. But I'm going to give you a choice now, Miriam, because you have a choice between Ken Dodd and happiness, the Turtles Happy Together, House Martin's Happy Hour, or Take That and Happy Now. See what we've done there.
Oh, I'm going to go with Take That.
You're going to go Take That. So, well, you know, strangely enough, I thought the Turtles might have just been in there, but ultimately the original boys from Take That get the Miriam Akhtar seal of approval. Miriam, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you, good self, today. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
My pleasure.
Check my phone. much, twice as fast today. Might slip away.
Brandon Flowers talking about runaways, but maybe you need to slow down. Maybe you just need to travel slowly. After all, it's the travelling that actually is the pleasuring side of things as opposed to the arrival and so on and so forth. To talk about the ways in which people can actually get the most from their family holiday by maybe actually just slowing down, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals now who are going to share with us the wisdom in so many delightful ways. First of all, somebody I'd like to refer to as Renaissance Woman, since her time in Blue Peen, and even more, it's Katie Hill. How are you, Katie?
I'm very well, thank you. Just reclining, having grapes dropped in my mouth as a Renaissance woman.
I think so. I mean, I think it's you have reached that stage in your career where clearly that's the routine. We are not worthy in many ways. And we've also got the wonderful Steve Newbury from DFDS. How are you, Steve?
I'm good, thank you, Alex.
Steve, we come to you first in terms of this slow travelling side of things. Is it a case that we just need to slow down? In a world where we're constantly on it and on it and on it all the time, maybe that's not the solution to happy travelling?
No, and I think we've forgotten, actually, about the joy of the journey and the overwhelming stress of travelling with children is taking the enjoyment out of holidays. And 44% of parents who we spoke to said that it put them off booking a holiday, and I think that's a really sad thing, because actually if we just slow down and forget the hustle and bustle of life, actually the excitement of travelling by ferry with ever-changing scenery, and actually it gives everyone a break on the journey as well.
Katie, does this resonate with your own experience as a mum of two in terms of sometimes you try so hard to coordinate, get all the lists made up, etc., that actually you forget to enjoy the actual journey itself?
Well, we love travel as a family because I work quite a lot of as a travel writer. So we're fully on board, so to speak, with the travel game. But I have to say, last summer I took my children on a ferry. And, you know, as adults, we very much treat the travel element as the getting from A to B, like get me to my holiday, you know, this bit sort of incidental. And for my kids, the ferry was the absolute highlight of the holiday. They thought it was magical. And actually, thinking back to my own childhood and going on ferries, it was magical because we'd rock up to the Dover, we'd see the white cliffs, you'd hear the seagulls, you'd smell the sea air, and you just have this like sense of excitement inside you. And then, you know, on the journey, what I love with my kids is it really gives them a sense of going from A to B. It's the transition is so important, and often with travel it feels like you've kind of plucked them up in the air and dropped them somewhere, and they have no idea how they got there. But to see England disappearing and the White Cliffs disappearing, and is that France I can make out in the distance, they're like, okay, this is how the world works. There's islands, there's sea in between. They kind of grasp it a bit more, and the magic of being on board for them, yeah, total holiday highlight.
We already found out earlier that our studio guest today, Emily Hartley from Leeds Trinity University, has travelled to Hong Kong, and amongst other things. Is what Katie's been saying jive with yourself at all in terms of your own experiences and so on, that sometimes there is a bit of stress when you're packing up and everything else?
Definitely, yeah. I only went to Hong Kong last year, so...
So that was that with the family or was it
with... No, that was with my ex-boyfriend, actually, yep.
That has stresses in its own way, basically. So basically, Katie, if you're travelling with sort of potential boyfriends as well, that could be a disaster, I would have thought.
Well, I was quite excited to hear Brandon Flowers singing about getting engaged on a Friday night. It's Friday, girls, that's all I'm saying. But no, I think there's a real romance, actually, to ferry travel. And... you know, there's just the thing that you can go out on deck. You're not strapped into a seat. You can move around. You know, there's restaurants. You can enjoy yourself. You can change your scenery. And, yeah, I think it's actually a really good option for everyone, couples, families, the lot. But in terms of the stress factor as a family, I think it's second to none how easy it's made family travel.
Steve, is this a call to bring back the rickshaw when it actually comes to getting to people, to actually sort of... A rickshaw couldn't get better in terms of, as they found out in Hong Kong, that if you want
well,
to have a slow mode...
Given that there's a person pulling it, I wouldn't say that's the greatest example.
it was just a thought, you know, in terms of the way forward.
I can leave that thought.
Okay, that's fine. Let's move on then in terms of tips that we can provide for parents who are actually looking to keep their children entertained. I mean, is it a case of you need to have all of the electronic devices, or is that the last thing you should be doing?
No, that's the last thing
Thank
you should
you.
Be doing, especially on the ferry. That from the moment you drive on board the ferry, and even the journey to the ferry can be exciting for children as well, but from the moment you go on board and you come up through the stairs and you can see the different sights and smells, you can hear the rumble of the engines, you can see what's going on in the port, actually you don't need any electronic entertainment. Actually, you can experience the real world, and you know, you can have something to eat, and then you can go up on deck, and as you're leaving the port and as you're traveling across the sea, you can just experience life from a new dimension and the ever-changing scenery. And we don't need electronic devices to do that.
I
remember as a kid as well finding it fascinating, because you drive on board and you're seeing all the people telling everyone where to park, and then there's all these chains and they're kind of moving the layers up and down. And, you know, from the minute you're on, I do think kids find it fascinating. And last year, you know, my kids didn't look at electronic devices once because they didn't need to, because there was just so much to do.
Which is the ideal holiday in so many ways. Emily, any memories from yourself you'd like to share with us as a, you know, within the family holiday?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been to quite a few places, and definitely when I was younger, travelling was one of my favourite parts, especially being on the aeroplane, going on trains.
Yeah, they're very speedy. Aeroplanes and trains are a lot speedier than ferries, you know, clearly that's the way forward. We haven't mentioned the B word, but we're going to. Clearly that could add all sorts of stresses as we see Canadians and Australians scooting through those passport queues, and of course, depending on what relationship we actually have, who knows what could actually happen. Is that something, Steve, you're concerned about, or is it a case of just enjoy the passport queue and various other bits and pieces?
No, it's nothing to worry about. We've done a lot of background research. We've also got loads of plans in place. So So we are ready for any eventuality that Brexit brings us. And actually, the crews on board are just there to welcome everyone, relax them, and whatever happens, we can't control any queues at Passport. They happen today. But once they're on board, we can relax them, and we can get their journey going and bring back the joy.
So I'm getting the sense that ultimately what we really need to actually provide advice for both the European Parliament and indeed our own Parliament is the words of Katie Hill. You know, that's the key thing. So no added pressure, Katie, but we fully expect you to add, in addition to TV presenter and travel writer, Brexit sorter outer in the near future. So
I can't work miracles.
Oh, I'm sure you can. DFDSEAways is the .co.uk is the website.
The better one to go to is dfds.com.
Even better.
Love to go on an EAways, but I think you mean Seaways. There we are.
So you're quite right. It is Seaways.
Yeah. It's a whole other form of transport.
This is what comes of travelling from Lincoln to Teesside and early in the morning, and you think, where? What's
bless
it all going?
You earned your weekend, my friend.
Oh, back to Lincoln later. Obviously, katiehill.com, presumably you can also find out marvellous things about your own writing as well.
Yes, you can, yes.
Excellent. Katie Hill and Steve Newbury, have you both had a reasonably interesting and stress-free and enjoyable telephonic journey with us today? Has it been
all
okay,
about
you guys?
The journey.
Absolutely fantastic.
So I take it you will return in the near future?
Of course.
Got to have a holiday first.
Well, exactly. It's not that stressful, the phone link, Katie, surely. You know, which, Braveheart.
See you.
course, we won't stop believing, because that's what we do. We've been listening to Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting, actually, on Hospedia Channel 1, doing a whole range of things with, of course, Emily Hartley, who's been seeing us through a range of interviewees from Dennis, the chemist's line, right the way through Miriam Akhtar, happiness experts, and Katie Hill, of course. I suspect you don't remember Katie when she was in Blue Peter. No.
No.
I didn't think so, and I didn't want to actually raise anything at the time, because why would we? Jeff Phipps, of course, ADP UK Managing Director, and Annabelle Jones, who is the Human Resources Director for the same company, were also chatting to us from that point of view as well. Emily, we're going to chat to you now for a few moments at least, because we'll be seeing more of you as the next few weeks and months proceed. You are a student at Leeds Trinity University. You're studying broadcast journalism, and you also produce a whole range of things, including a Leeds-based website called The Culture Vulture, in which I believe you write dance performance reviews.
Yes, I...
So what dance... Is it contemporary dance? Is it ballet? Is it classical? Is it ballroom? Is it Strictly?
Well, one of the very first event I went to was a contemporary one, although my dancing background, I've done ballet, and I used to do tap and modern as well when I was younger. So
I find tap dancing on radio works so well. It's unbelievable. I mean, the sort of routines we can actually get, it's brilliant stuff. As indeed is ventriloquism, but that's another line entirely. You're reading broadcast journalism. Is that something you've always wanted to do? Because I noticed you've got A-levels in English literature, photography and German.
Well, actually, for quite a few years, I wanted to be an orthopaedic surgeon.
Right.
But then... chemistry wasn't my subject.
It all works together. Yeah. So what have your thoughts been now you spent nearly an hour and three quarters with us here at Southside Broadcasting? Has it sort of been worse than you expected, better than you expected? What's the thought?
I've really enjoyed it, actually. It's been interesting to hear different topics raised that I wouldn't usually hear, and talk to people that you wouldn't usually speak to.
Well, we've enjoyed having you, and I think today, rather tomorrow, you'll be joining us for a location report at Scarborough, where we'll be geeking beside the seaside. We do like to geek beside the seaside. It's Sci-Fi Weekender. Steve Dickinson and company will be there, a whole range of other bits and pieces. You might have a chance to meet some of our other sister station Siren Radio's presenters too. Are you looking forward to that?
I am, yes.
This is exciting, definitely. And we'll see Radio Links. You're back with us, of course, in the studios here next Friday for Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast, Middlesbrough Football Club's official voice of the fans with Rob Nichols. Also probably Book of the Month, in which I can actually reveal you've still got a chance to actually read the Book of the Month that's been selected for our critical review and analysis this particular time, and indeed you can access this online and so on. And the Book of the Month, which I'm sure you actually wait for the title, because you'll be quite keen to actually find out what the title actually is. This is what you call filling, Emily, in terms of various other things, whilst you're looking for your device to say what's it's called. His Dark Sun, and it's by a new author who is originally from Middlesbrough, and she's produced this, I think it's fair to say, a little bit of a dystopian thriller in many ways. I mean, I don't want to give any spoilers away from that point of view, but it is it's an interesting read. It's a relatively straightforward read, but it's well worth accessing. And again, it's called His Dark Sun, I think, by Jude Brown. I'm just waiting for confirmation to come through as far as that's concerned, because you know, when you put things up on device, this is why I tend to prefer paper at times. I mean, I know it's the trees, etc., but you say, come along, you know, let's not wait all the time for this to work through. Yeah, let's just say it's Jude Brown and His Dark Sun, which we'll be talking about this time next week. Don't forget, you can reach us anytime as far as Southside Broadcasting is concerned. You can call us on 01642 854742. That's 01642 854742. If you're listening to this via cable, you can obviously use email info@southsideradio.com, which is what Emily did. Of course, you sent an email to us.
Yeah,
what happened?
Saying,
exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah, just confirmation, it is Jude Brown, His Dark Sun. So that's it. And if you actually get through and call us and use that wonderful thing called the phone, you might get a voicemail as well. We're basically welcoming you along and saying, leave a message and we'll get back to you as soon as feasible from that point of view. Channel 1 brings you a whole heap of other goodies as well. As we mentioned, this weekend we'll be featuring the Sci-Fi Weekender from that point of view. Lots of other great stuff coming through. We say happy trails for now. Lots of great music coming up as far as Southside Radio and Southside Broadcast is actually concerned. Okay, Emily, you're going to have to say one critical thing now. Two words. We'll say it together. The words are Happy Friday. A one, two, three.
Happy Friday.
Friday.
See my face in lights, on my name, I'm okay.